talking Fictional Frontiers. It's James Baranelli time on Fictional Frontiers. James is the founder of RealViews.net. He's the best online film critic in America, and he's back to do one of his Real Take segments with us, talking Star Wars, The Last Jedi. We had a chance to see it this week, and I know a lot of you are going to be going out and seeing it tonight. James, a lot to talk about, so let's get right into it. Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
I'll try to do most of this without spoilers, because I want people to see the film, reach their own conclusions about what they're seeing, and then maybe in about a month's time, when everybody who really wants to see the film will have seen it, we can go out and tick off one by one, you know, all the issues that we have problems with specifics, and we can talk about the ending a little bit more openly, and we can talk about what direction they might be going in with Episode 9, which I really think is, in one sense, it's very clear based on how this movie ends, but in another sense, it's not clear at all. So, and as if that's a confusing enough statement, I can't clarify it until I talk about where the ending is. But I will say this, and this is not a spoiler. The Last Jedi has an ending. It's not a cliffhanger. It feels like a movie that, you know, in the sense that there is a climax and a conclusion. Structurally, it feels like a movie. I won't say a standalone movie, because it's the beginning of it is strongly linked with The Force Awakens. So I think if you take The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and combine them together, that's a whole movie, beginning, middle, and end, which, again, leaves you a question about, okay, what are they going to do with Episode 9? Because the story, for the most part, has now been told. So you have that when you're going into The Last Jedi. Know that you're not going to be left, you know, having to wait for two more years to see how things really conclude. This gives you a satisfying, from a structural point of view, this is satisfying. From a creative point of view, is it satisfying? That I'm not really sure. The movie is really about, there are about six moments in the film, and we'll go over what those six moments are next time we talk about this.
Exactly.
But there are about six moments in the film. They are very good to magnificent moments. They are, some of them are the kind that get, you know, goosebumps or goose pimples or whatever you want to call it going. They raise the hair on the back of your neck. Those kinds of moments that, you know, only cinema can deliver. And there are about six of them in this movie. One of them which caused somebody in our screening to utter a choice profanity.
Yes.
So there are about six of them. They are great moments. They are worthwhile moments. The problem is, outside of those six moments, the story either makes no sense or is underwhelming. I think the way I put it in my review was something like, the threads of the narrative are all twisted up or snapped or something like that. It's really a rather boring story. It seems small. Hmm. You know, you're in this universe, this grand universe that George Lucas has created and that we've come to love over so many years. It's such a big universe with so much possibilities, and now it's been shrunk down to this small area with these small people having their small problems and these really contrived subplots that are in it just because we have every character that we met in The Force Awakens now has to have something to do. And in order to fulfill that mandate, some of these characters have to do just doesn't make any sense or is utterly pointless and is very clearly just there because hey, well, we know who this character is, and we have to give them something to do. And outside of Attack of the Clones, I can't really think of a movie in the Star Wars cycle where that was true. Even Force Awakens, the characters in there had specific purposes. It's not like we followed Poe down. Here, this would be an example, Force Awakens. It's not like after Poe Dameron disappeared in the sands of Jakku, it's not like we follow his story of how he gets back to the Resistance. And maybe he meets somebody that takes him to somebody else. And on his way back to the Resistance, he stops off at a space casino. And then he eventually gets back to the Resistance. No, I mean, there's no need to tell that story. Poe Dameron is in The Force Awakens in scenes he needs to be in. They don't create extra scenes just to give Oscar Isaac some more screen time. In this movie, it appears that they have created scenes just to give particular characters more screen time that they don't necessarily need to have. And what it does is it balloons what I think would have been a pretty good hour and 45-minute movie into an unwieldy 2.5-hour movie. This movie does not deserve 2.5 hours. It's a much shorter movie that they've larded up with all sorts of unnecessary stuff to make it 2.5 hours, and as a result, these six great moments, instead of there being 10 minutes in between each of them, sometimes there's 15 or 20 minutes, and quite honestly, I'm not sure the first one happens until about 45 minutes into the movie. I'm trying to think what the first one actually is. It's not anywhere near the beginning. The movie opens with a big space battle that is very reminiscent of the big space battle that opened Revenge of the Sith, which is, you know, fine. You're taking inspiration from George Lucas's space battle. The problem is you don't really do anything with this space battle beyond what George Lucas did with the space battle in Revenge of the Sith. I mean, it's nice, it's pretty, you see hardware. There's some tension. I mean, it's not a badly done space battle. It's a quite, you know, adequate space battle. But are you going to tell me this is anywhere close to what we got in, you know, at the end of the original Star Wars, or even the big space battle in the end of Return of the Jedi, or the big space battle in Revenge of the Sith? No, it's kind of a Battlestar Galactica space battle. I mean, you know, that's sort of where we are with. You know, with that, and then after that, then the thing goes into like hibernation for an hour. I'll tell you a little anecdote here that I haven't mentioned to you off the air.
Okay.
Having had far too much coffee before this movie, I was forced to take a bathroom break about an hour into the movie, and I, of course, made sure that when I was going to take my bathroom break, Mark Hamill was not going to be on screen, because those are the scenes you didn't want to miss, the scenes with Mark Hamill, the scenes with everybody else you didn't really care about. So as I was walking out, I saw a security guard that I know really well. And I made a comment to him, "It's moving a little slowly, don't you think?" And he said, he was, because he's in the tunnel. He wasn't actually in the theater itself.
Okay, okay.
And he said, "I had to walk out of, you know, back here because I was afraid I was going to fall asleep standing."
He said that, really? Wow.
He said that. And you know the security guard I'm referring
yes,
to.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty level-headed guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is, you know, if you're a fan, you probably will be engaged to the point that the only thing you'll think is parts of this are moving a little slowly, or parts of this seem a little unnecessary. But if you're not a fan, you know, you might as well go to the snack counter or something like that. The Mark Hamill scenes are very good. Hamill is completely invested in this portrayal.
Oh,
and, yeah, we see the Luke Skywalker that we remember from other films, but we also see what age and what some internal conflict
has done
to him.
Wonderful performance, yeah.
So I thought that was a really good performance. There are some surprises. I mean, the movie does do things you just never would expect it to do. And it's not a negative thing. I mean, these are, for the most part, they're good surprises. Not to the extent that necessarily the results are positive, narratively speaking. But they are things that you wouldn't expect as a viewer. And they don't destroy any, you know, no legacies are destroyed in this movie. No, they don't go back and, like, rewrite the history of Star Wars or anything like that. It is, you know, as I said, it's, everything seems smaller here. You know, you got the sense in the original trilogy that the battle, the Empire versus the Rebellion, that this was a battle that stretched from, you know, all corners of the galaxy. And, you know, Lucas kind of emphasized that at the end of Return of the Jedi, the special edition, when he showed celebrations on a bunch of different worlds. So this was a struggle that seemed to encompass the entire galaxy. You get to the, in The Last Jedi, you feel that, no, it's just really small. It's just this little corner of the galaxy with, you know, with not that many resistance people. And frankly, the First Order doesn't look like there's a whole lot of people on that side either. It just looks like there's, okay, a bunch of, like, you know, the ragtag ships out there, or the bunch of moron generals. I mean, I've never seen dumber tactics. I mean, as I mentioned to you off the air, I think the problem with the First Order is all of their smart people died on one of the Death Stars. So there's nobody left except morons. And the morons have now taken control. You know, the movie, you know, you come back to the old mixed bag thing. Mm-hmm. There are moments in this movie that you'll be glad that you saw it for. But when you sit back and look at the story itself, what is this movie, what story is this movie trying to tell? It really disappoints that there's so little going on here, that the movement in terms of plot from the end of The Force Awakens to the end of The Last Jedi is minuscule. There are things happen that have implications, but, you know, we're used to these grand adventures. I mean, Star Wars. You take a farm boy at the beginning, learns about the Force, and destroys the greatest weapon of the Galactic Empire. That's scope. That's movement. That's, you know, galactic stuff. Star Wars.
That's the hero's journey, right there.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you get to, similarly, you have, you know, big things that happen in Empire Strikes Back, both in terms of not that much happens with the rebel forces in Empire Strikes Back, because they're on the run. They seem to have regrouped by the end of it, but Empire Strikes Back is not about the rebels. It's about Luke's journey and the journey of Leia and Han. It's about the individual heroes. And I can't really say that there is a journey for Rey and for Kylo Ren in this film, but it's not on that level. But it's just sort of dwarfed by the amount of time that's spent on things that don't go anywhere or mean anything, and then are resolved by these contrived little moments that are, I think, are supposed to get us to clap. I mean, there's a little thing with BB-8. I'm not going to say what it is, but there's a thing with BB-8 that I think we're supposed to cheer, but I just groaned.
Well, let me ask you this with respect to BB-8, and I guess it probably applies to the entire run so far. The trailers reveal this, so it's not really much of a spoiler, but Kylo Ren... Adam Driver's character says in the trailer that you've got to kill the past. The whole idea is killing the past. And You mentioned this moment with BB-8. How much of this series is about doing away with the past and moving forward to the point where the past is almost completely disregarded and we are, quote unquote, being force-fed these characters and these storylines?
Difficult to say with certainty until we see episode 9, but that seems to be
That's
the direction.
That's a Yoda-like answer.
Well, it seems to be the direction that they're going in. Now, you could argue that the purpose of that is that these three movies, the whole, the idea here is that we are supposed to cap the Skywalker saga stories. That this is all about bringing closure to this part of the Star Wars universe. And to that extent, it depends on how they handle it in Episode 9. There's still plenty of callbacks in this movie to, characters and instances of the past. So, what are they going to do now with Episode 9? And that'll be it anyway. So, from there, where are they going to go? I think it'll be an interesting challenge. I mean, Episode 7, box office-wise, was driven by the fact that we were going to see the original characters coming back. Episode 8 was driven by the fact that after Luke basically wasn't in Episode 7, okay, now we get Luke. Episode 8 is we get Luke. Episode 9, what's the hook there now? There is no hook for Episode 9. Are the only people who are going to see Episode 9 the Star Wars diehards? And I think that's the problem that Disney faces. If their idea is we're going to wipe away the past and start anew, you've just wiped three quarters of Star Wars fandom out of the picture. That does not make sense from a financial perspective. So,
well, why do you think they've done this? Why do you think they've kind of, pushed away
stuck.
These characters?
They don't know where to go.
Well, I mean, with certain characters, for example, in The Force Awakens, C-3PO and R2-D2, who have been, major players in a sense with respect to all of these films. George Lucas himself has said that they are the throughway for these films. They've been reduced to barely cameos. So why do that? Why not just continue, why not just continue their journey and their story, not on a grand scale, but at least make them part of the narrative in a greater way?
Well, you do things like BB-8 for merchandising purposes. BB-8 opens a whole new merchandising stream. The R2 and 3PO merchandising streams they're still there. They've dried up a little bit, but they're still there. So you keep the characters around. They have their moments. They're in the film. They're certainly not, and they have speaking or beeping parts. Now BB-8 is the hot merchandising thing, so you focus on BB-8, and then in future movies there will be other characters or other things to take that. I mean, Lucas did this too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of you play with where the money is. The whole purpose of having porgs.
Oh boy, I knew you were going to get to this
in
at some
this
point.
Movie. Is merchandising.
Well, what did you
now,
think about the porgs?
Have the potential to blow past Jar Jar Binks and the Ewoks as the most hated aspects of the Star Wars universe. Fortunately, their screen time is suitably limited so that they never get to that level of annoyance. But that boy, are they annoying. And then they're not the only ones. They've got all these other things.
Oh, you mean the nun creatures that were on that planet?
Yeah, the nun creatures, the idiot wolves with the... why?
Well, let me ask you this again. It kind of goes back to I know you mentioned the marketing and the commercial aspects, but I kept looking for the Rodians and some of the other creatures we've seen from the other films, and it just seems like they don't exist in these films at all. And I guess, again, it goes back to marketing and commercial concerns. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. But so, the problem, and you raised this. Why is, they don't know what to do with these films. Why are we not, they were handed an opportunity and botched it completely because they were interested in the wrong things. They were interested, the mandate was bring back Han Solo, kill Han Solo, bring back Princess Leia, bring back Luke, bring in new characters, and they were so focused on ticking off these things on a list that they had to do that they forgot that, oops, the story should come first. The checklist comes second. You do the story first, and then you figure out, once you have the story, okay, how are we going to fit organically these different characters into the movie? And if it doesn't fit, don't force it. And I think that The Force Awakens, maybe Rian Johnson's problem with this movie is he was constrained too much by things that happened in The Force Awakens.
Well, listen, James, one final question as we head out, and I know a lot of people are going to be listening to this show as they get ready for tonight's screenings. How should they go in? How should their expectations be? What should their expectations be? And what do you think ultimately the audience reaction is going to be after the first weekend?
Well, I think if you're going in to see it, there are some problems, but it is still Star Wars. And enjoy it for what it is. Recognize that there are some great moments in the film that, you get reunions with all the characters that you care about, at least the ones that are still alive, and maybe a couple others. And it's just a, as a Star Wars fan, it's an event. It's not a movie. And you experience it as an event. You'd probably be disappointed by some of what happens and not disappointed at all by some of the other things that happen. It's not a perfect movie. It's not on the level of the great Star Wars movies that we've seen, that we have seen at times in the past. It's another chapter in a saga. We should probably be grateful that we have this as opposed to not having it. As far as the weekend box office is going to be tremendous on this film.
Mm-hmm.
I think where this film might lose momentum is after the first couple of weeks. The Force Awakens benefited greatly just from a certain longevity, at least in today's what passes for longevity to today. I think that this movie is probably going to tail off pretty quickly.
The running time is going to hurt it too, I think.
Yeah,
less shows,
and it's a film that, you could go back and see Force Awakens a couple of two, three times in theaters and not feel it was well paced for the most part. There were some dead parts in between, but like the whole Han Solo on that freighter stuff. that's a fast forward area for me when I'm rewatching.
Mm-hmm, me too.
This movie, it's going to be tough for anybody but a diehard to watch it more than once. There is so much padding in this movie. And it's going to hurt overall box office, not to the point where...
what about kids? Let me ask you that. Kids, you talk about the running time. What do you think kids are going to do when they have to, sit through all of that? Do you think
they're
going to
squirm a lot?
Okay, yeah, that's
what
I
thought. But I think a lot of the padding actually might work for kids.
How so?
It's not adult padding. It's stupid stuff.
Well, Star Wars is for kids, too.
This is really too much.
Hope is.
I guess my son is going to see it, but my wife is going to take him because I don't particularly want to sit through this again until it's on home video and I can fast forward through parts of it. But I think that the box office, the first one made domestic, what, 9:30 or something?
Something like that,
like that,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one, I think it's probably a safe bet to say around 750.
Okay.
You know, 200 easily on the first weekend, unless the running time precludes that. I don't know. I mean, it may be that because, I guess Force Awakens was like only 15 minutes shorter, so it's not that big an impediment. But let's say, you know, 200 or so the first weekend. Second weekend it's out is Christmas weekend. I don't know how that impacts the, you know, Christmas on a Monday, how does that impact the weekend before box office? Will it depress it because there are so many people that are doing family things? I don't know. But I would think that, you know, certainly that the second week out, it should be able to do 100, 150 million for the whole week plus the, you know, the weekend, maybe 200 million for week plus weekend for that 7-day period. So by the end, by the time you get to Christmas Day, the movie should be up around 400 million, and then it's going to tail off somewhat after that.
Well, James, we will definitely revisit this film in the next couple of weeks, and I guess now I know what not to get you for the holidays. No porgs, right?
No, no porgs. Definitely not porgs.
Again, James Varinelli, the founder of...
If I do get a porg, you know, that little smack there in that one scene, that looked actually kind of delicious. Maybe I'll have that for my holiday dinner.
Oh boy, we'll revisit that definitely next couple of weeks, because you'll get what he's talking about when we talk about that scene. But again, it's James Baranelli, the founder of realviews.net, and his Real Take segment on Fictional Frontiers. James, we will talk to you in 2 weeks and kind of wrap up the year.
Okay.
It's just a